spring football's a wrap at UVA and Virginia Tech. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more this week on Teal and Barber. Welcome to episode 109 of Teal and Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com's Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite pods. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the paper, and joining me as always, my co-host, the 14-time Sports Writer of the Year, the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, Mr. David Teal. David, how are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Well, we have lots of football to talk about after the spring games here in the Commonwealth. But first, we've got some fresh and some good news for Virginia Tech basketball. We learned on Tuesday that Hunter Couture, the star guard, great defender, great three-point shooter, he'd be coming back for a fifth season. Big lift for Mike Young's bunch.
Almost as big as Elizabeth Kitley coming back for Kenny Brooks.
Yeah, how about that? They're doing all right in Blacksburg with returners, huh?
They are. Kenny Brooks's bunch is going to be loaded in 2023-24. But more of the point, Hunter Couture announcing yesterday on social that he is indeed coming back for a fifth year. And Mike, to kind of encapsulate it, by the time Hunter Couture exits Castle Coliseum for the last time, he will have made more three-pointers than any player in Virginia Tech history.
Yeah, he's only 17 away from breaking the record. And for Hunter Couture, that's a good week. 17 right. Three-pointers, if we remember what he did in Brooklyn in that ACC tournament. David, this brings back a pretty loaded backcourt for Mike Young when you think about Sean Padula, MJ Collins, Rodney Rice now healthy, and they're bringing in a couple of freshmen too. This is going to be maybe a different look Mike Young team than what we've seen so far at Tech?
Very much backcourt heavy. The question's going to be the front court. Grant Basile is headed off to pursue professional basketball, wherever that might take him. Mike Young has added some guys in the portal. Tyler Nickel from North Carolina, Makai Long from Old Dominion previously at Rhode Island. Long, I think, averaged almost 9 rebounds a game last season for Old Dominion. The Hokies are going to need a front court presence. I mean, they return, Lynn Kidd, Malajuel Poteet, John Camden. But Camden's not really a front court guy. He's more of a longer wing. But in the backcourt, plenty of depth for Mike Young to play with different combinations.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Couture is remembered. I think of him, as the kid who was the Wofford commit. And when Mike Young got hired and decided to bring Couture with him, fans were like, what is this guy doing? You can't win ACC games with Wofford commits. And obviously that has been proven dramatically wrong. And yeah, I think you'll remember this, David, but he's also got great perspective. I remember the quote he gave us during the losing streak about, the pressure and the mounting, and Hunter's answer was kind of like, hey man, my life is great. I'm playing college basketball. So just a great guy to lead your program and the kind of veteran player you want on your roster.
Absolutely. And let's not ignore Mike. He's a hell of a defensive player. Yeah. I mean, he can get after you on the ball, very scrappy, arguably the Hokies' best defender. And defense was an Achilles heel for Virginia Tech last season. And to have Couture back gives Mike Young at least the first step toward improving that.
No doubt. Well, that was the big breaking news of the week. The big stuff over the weekend, David, was football related. It was a couple spring games. You were in Blacksburg with the Hokies. I was in Charlottesville with UVA. An emotional game at UVA. First game back. After the shooting tragedy that killed three players, Mike Hollins, who was seriously injured in that shooting, back gets the first carry of the game. Right. And David, it was not symbolic. He was a workhorse. He played great. He scored an emotional touchdown. His little brother was there on the field with him when he scored. Besides the X's and O's, before we get into what we saw, just a really supercharged emotional scene. I was surprised there weren't more fans there. And I know UVA doesn't draw well for the spring game, but I thought this was going to be, more of a rallying point for the community.
Yeah, I wondered about that, but from what I read, the weather wasn't great, and you know that may have played a factor. But you're right. I can't imagine just the internal emotions there of getting back on the field. And oh, by the way, it's right there in the end zone, right?
Yeah. They did not hide it or try to, you know, no. Tony Elliott has been very deliberate in the way he's talked about it. He said, we're moving forward. We're not moving on. Yeah. You got to keep going forward. But there was plenty of the past there. They had the players who they lost. Their numbers were in the end zone. Their names were in the end zone. There was a moment of silence. There were other announcements. And if you watched the ESPN ACC Network broadcast, you got some football eventually, but most of that broadcast centered on everything this program's been through. And I think it was a good, I don't know if cathartic's the right word, but moment for the players, for the coaches to get out there, to have some of those emotions. And then the thing that stuck out to me and the thing I wrote about was they were able from that supercharged emotional beginning to then play with a lot of joy. It seemed like they really enjoyed being out there, enjoyed playing against each other, competing. And that's the next step to me in recovery, right? Is when can you get to that point of you're not overcome with grief and you're not feeling guilty about moving forward, but you're feeling pride. And I think that's where they're at. And, you know, Des Kitchings, I thought, had a great quote after the game. He said, part of healing is it's that joy. It's moving forward with joy, with passion, with appreciation. I thought all of that came through Saturday.
And in so doing, Mike, in playing with that joy and passion, you are honoring those fallen three and their memory and what they so much loved to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, Tony Elliott said, hey, we're playing for guys who don't have the opportunity to be out on the grass, whose families can't watch them play anymore. So it does. It brings another level of appreciating your opportunity, kind of going back to what we said with Hunter Couture and realizing, you know, how fortunate you are to be in your circumstance. And I think that's what those UVA players showed. Now, on the field, football-wise, David, I said Mike Hollins, and it starts there. And depth at the running back position, there are four or five guys who look like they are ready to be RB1 for Virginia. And Tony Elliott and Des Kitchings, they're committed to making this a run-first offense.
Mike Hollins, Xavier Brown, Paris Jones, Kobe Pace, and then you wrote about the walk-on Jack Greasy.
What a great game he had, and you know the lineage certainly with the Greasy yes. family, a pair of NFL quarterbacks, but also Virginia lineage. His mom and dad both went to UVA. His dad played defensive back for the Cavaliers, and it's unlikely that the Cavaliers will get that deep onto the depth chart, but it also does drive home the point of they've got a lot of options there. We didn't see a lot from Kobe Pace, the Clemson transfer, but he's supposedly the guy with the best burst, big play ability. We're still kind of waiting to see what Cody Brown, the transfer from Miami a year ago, what he's going to be. You mentioned Xavier Bradshaw's bulked up, and Paris Jones is the most experienced. But, David, all eyes are going to be on Mike Hollins, who right now seems to be playing, remarkably, the best football of his life.
Remarkably is absolutely the correct word, given what he's been through psychologically, emotionally, and physically, just to overcome the wounds from the shooting and to then be out on the football field, because as he has recounted, he was told his career was likely over, and it clearly is not, and God bless him for it.
Yeah, you made the point that, you know, you honor your former teammates by moving forward and playing with that joy. And Mike Hollins, I mean, he absolutely embodies that. And he takes that to heart, right? That's sort of his mission, is to play great football and enjoy football and appreciate what he has as a way of remembering those teammates. So there's depth at running back. There's talent at running back. It's also an offense, though, David, that's focused on taking more deep shots. And that is the design of what they wanted, right? Run first, play action, catch defenses sleeping, and go over the top. And they showed some of that in the spring game. And Tony Muscat showed he can throw a pretty accurate deep ball.
What was the one that J.R. Wilson for 60-some-odd yards? Is that right?
63 yards. It would have been the third longest play from scrimmage last season, so that was certainly a good sign.
Yeah. Mike, do they have anybody who can block?
David, that is the lingering question mark. And now, the pass protection was shoddy on Saturday at the spring game, but part of that was they did split the team and play a true game. So instead of your five offensive linemen together, you had your center and your left side with one team. You had your right side with the other. So there were some continuity issues there. But this is a position that they're going to have to address in the transfer portal. And they've already gone out and gotten another player, Brian Stevens, from Dayton will be coming in. Where does he fit in? Probably an interior guy. They still want to go out and get another offensive lineman to bring some experience and some depth to that position. But offensive line offensively is going to be the big question. Defensively, the big question is going to be at cornerback.
Yeah,
and they've got great depth at the safety position, so much so that they've played Lex Long at linebacker at times. They've played Cohen King at safety at times. The question is at corner, where Tavon Kyle, the transfer from Ohio State, looked, he's the corner that got beat on that touchdown you referred to, the deep one to Wilson. They need to go out in the portal, get another corner or two. Cameron Kelly, who has been playing safety but could have been an option, his name is back in the portal, the guy who transferred from North Carolina, 757 kid. So he's on the way out. So offensive line, big question mark. Cornerback, big question mark. Both going to need to be addressed in the transfer portal.
And wow, you know, you talk about starting the season with some challenges. You know, you go to Nashville to play Tennessee and then come home and play a James Madison bunch that will be ready. And I talked to Kurt Cignetti last week, and he likes his crew. That is for darn sure.
Yeah, this schedule gives Virginia very few breaks in the early part, especially. It's going to be interesting to see. And again, this is college football, right? This is the reality of college football these days. But we don't really know what we're going to see from Virginia because we don't know who they're going to lose in the portal and who they're going to gain. So tune back in the fall, I guess, when we'll have a better sense of what this roster might look like. You got a sense of what Virginia Tech in year two under Brent Pry is going to look like. David, what did you see in Blacksburg in the Hokies spring game that stood out to you?
Mike, do the Hokies have anybody who can block?
Maybe these two need to just get together, right?
Yeah, I feel like a broken record. But you know, your point about splitting up the offensive lines in Charlottesville on Saturday, Virginia Tech had similar issues simply because Xavier Chaplin, who's kind of the project, not kind of, he is the projected starter at left tackle. He was not playing on Saturday. You know, guys with nicks and stuff, they hold him out. So there's one thing. Your starting left tackle is not playing. And then Grant Wells, the incumbent quarterback, played like it. He was surgical for the first quarter, going, I think, 10 for 12. Two incompletions were throwaways with a little bit of pressure. He was operating behind the best offensive line group. He was not operating with the most experienced receivers, the transfer receivers who you expect to really contribute, including Ollie Jennings from Highland Springs. He was on the white team, which was quarterbacked by Kyron Drones to start. So Grant Wells throwing to, you know, some receivers who you might think of as backups, Steven Gosnell, Tucker Holloway. He looked really, really sharp.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked to Grant the week leading into the spring game, and he told me that when he went back and watched his throws, and he watched all his throws from last season, he told me, you know, he felt like in competition because he wanted to win, because he wanted to make a play, he was seeing things that weren't there. And he said, when you see things that aren't there as a quarterback, you throw balls into places you shouldn't throw them. And that, he thought, led to his interceptions. He thought it led to some of his big third down misses, incompletions. he said he's trying to make the smarter throw, take what's there, see what's actually there, not what he wishes is there. And David, it sounds like that's exactly what he was able to do on Saturday, at least.
It was. And afterward, Mike, it was interesting talking to him. Number one, to learn that he's getting married next month.
Yeah.
And he said that'll be much more stressful than the spring game, which I don't doubt. And then the benefit, at least in his mind, to now have the offensive coordinator, Tyler Bowen, be his position coach. Because as Virginia Tech fans know, that those duties were split last season. Bowen was the OC, Brad Glenn, now the offensive coordinator at Cincinnati, was the quarterback's coach. So when Glenn left for UC, they made Bowen the quarterback's coach. He had been doing tight ends. They moved running back's coach Stu Holt to tight ends, and then they brought in Elijah Brooks from Maryland as running back's coach. But Wells said to have the offensive coordinator in his position meeting room on a daily basis this spring has been invaluable to him.
And that makes sense. And again, I talked to Wells and I talked to Bowen going into the spring game, and they both talked about that, that Bowen said he had a better sense of what Wells was seeing and what he could do well. And I'm just going to ask you this, David. I don't know that I have an opinion formed yet. It feels a little bit like the storyline of where a bye week falls, right? And every coach every year tells you, oh yeah, that's a good spot for the bye week. Mm-hmm. Even though every year it's in a different spot. A year ago, all we heard about was how excellent it was going to be to develop quarterbacks, to have a quarterback coach who was just focused on that and didn't have to worry about the whole offense. So is it revisionist history? Is it spin? Mm-hmm. Or is this a better approach to running an offensive side of football?
Talk to me in mid-October.
Yeah. Right? The proof will be in the pudding.
No question. And to go back just a second to the O-line, the one thing that was notable to me is that, you know, at halftime they announced all the spring awards, and the offensive MVP for the spring was Parker Clements, the right tackle. And if that is indeed the case, and, you know, unless the coaches are trying to, you know, pat him on the back or give him a boost, if he truly, truly earned that, then that is a significant step for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, the identity that Brent Pry wants for his program, and it's not unfamiliar to Virginia Tech fans, it's to run the ball, to control the line of scrimmage, to play great defense. And two things that really have not been there in almost a decade, really, is that dominant offensive line and that back that you can just hammer at people until they wear down and he starts breaking long runs. And that is where Brent Pry wants to get. Are they there yet? Probably got a few steps to go, but it will be interesting to see with the reconfigured staff what this offense looks like. We talked a lot about Grant Wells, David, but there was another quarterback out there who they've brought in to compete. What did you see from Baylor transfer Drones? What did he do, and what do you make of his ability?
He was really skittish early, and Brent Pry said as much. I think in part because he was operating behind the twos, the offensive line. So the defense was in his face quite quickly. But he settled down, threw some good balls. He threw two picks, both on deflections, one that Ali Jennings tipped and then was picked, and then another that was deflected at the line of scrimmage by a defensive tackle. I forget which one. Maybe Fuga. I may have that wrong. But he got better as the afternoon wore along. And then much like the freshman at UVA, and I hope I get his name. Is it Calandria?
Yes, Anthony Calandria.
Yeah, who came in and kind of lit it up a little bit.
He was fun to watch.
Yeah, Pop Watson, the early enrollee freshman from Massachusetts, you know, he came in and threw a long touchdown pass and showed some scoot with his legs. Now, does he get in the mix? Probably not. But you know, he was fun to watch, just like you said Calandria was.
So what's the story with Taj Bullock? Because that was a guy, that a name that we've kind of been waiting and waiting and waiting. And And just nothing seems to be coming of that.
Mike, I'm surprised as we sit here at 10:06 on Wednesday morning that I haven't seen anything on Twitter about him being in the portal.
Yeah, it just hasn't seemed to take there at Virginia Tech for him.
No, it truly has not. And Virginia Tech needs some guys to go in the portal. Damian Sortoled, who covers the Hokies for us at the Roanoke Times, you know, he has noted, I think there are 5 or 6 scholarships over.
Over, yep.
Yeah, so they need to shed some people. And, oh, by the way, much like Virginia, they want to add an offensive lineman in the portal. So the Hokies definitely need to part ways with some folks.
Before we move on from Blacksburg, I want to ask you about the defensive side of the football. And, you know, some things that are obvious. I think they're really good at defensive tackle. I have some questions at end maybe. But the big change on defense is that Chris Marv is going to be calling the plays this season. He called the plays in the final game against Liberty, which they won 23-22. Before that, Brent Pry had been calling the plays. Brent's got a defensive background. He's still going to be heavily involved with the defense, but when I talked to Chris Marv going into the spring game, he was really excited to take over that role. What do you think, if anything, is going to change defensively with him in that position?
I don't know that a whole lot will change schematically, Mike. I think what will change is Brent Pry will have more time to be a head coach, not only during the week, but on game day. And as we have talked about previously, and Virginia Tech fans have griped about, his game management lacked at times last season. And Brent Pry will tell you that, in part because he was distracted by also serving as the de facto defensive coordinator in calling the plays. And it was interesting talking to Marv before the spring about that Liberty game, because you know they had coughed up several fourth quarter leads. Georgia Tech, NC State, Old Dominion, they just never could get a stop when it mattered. And they did against Liberty, not once but twice in the fourth quarter after they had taken that 1-point lead. And Marv said it was so cool to see and you mentioned this with UVA, the joy in his players' eyes when they were able to come through in the clutch, and for him to be down there on the sideline and sharing that with them. And that to him was the real cool part about being the defensive coordinator and calling the plays and sharing in that moment.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you think about that game and the operation worked better. Brent Pry did a better job with clock management. He said as much in that game. The defense held at the end the way they're supposed to. It seemed to work. And I certainly understand why they brought Chris Marv along a little slowly as a play caller, kind of getting him used to and ready for that role. It was, I thought, great patience by Brent Pry to say, hey, this is the way we're going to do it. And we're going to be, you took your lumps last year, right? But I think they're more ready to win and to execute at a high level because they took that approach. Certainly will be interesting to see how that all plays out. And again, as we keep saying, what these rosters look like come the fall, because certainly in Blacksburg, there is room and a need for some movement and some changes.
Yeah, no question. You mentioned earlier, Mike, Pry's desire to be a run-first offense. And I think this was very much intentional. We saw very little of Malachi Thomas and Bashal Tootin, who we think are going to be the featured backs come the fall. We saw more of Chance Black and Bryce Duke, both of whom rattled off some big gains behind the offensive line. So it'll be interesting to see if, like you believe, Virginia will have, that the Hokies have more depth at running back.
Yeah, you know, when we did a episode kind of looking at the spring, and I talked to Damian Sortoled about them, and we were trying to workshop a nickname for that 1-2 punch there, and I was working something with Thomas the Train and Toot Toot. I don't know. do you like that, or do we need to keep workshopping that a little bit? Little work to do. There's some work to do in Charlottesville for the basketball program, where Tony Bennett's roster is being completely rebuilt. He had some guys run out of eligibility. Kihei Clark, after 17 seasons as a starting point guard, is finally out of college eligibility, and that means we're going to have to stop making that joke at some point. Ben Vanderplas, Jaden Gardner, out of eligibility. Caden Shedrick, Francisco Cafaro into the transfer portal. Armon Franklin, Reese Beekman declaring for the NBA draft. Isaac Trout, the freshman who redshirted, transferred to Creighton. So massive overhaul on this roster at UVA. And Bennett has been addressing it by bringing guys in from the mid to low major range. Now, David, what do we make of this? Because the guys he's bringing in have had tremendous success where they were. Jordan Miner at Merrimack, one of the best players in the Northeast Conference. Andrew Rohde, the wing from St. Thomas, Minnesota. He was the Summit Conference, the Summit League Freshman of the Year. So these are guys who have gotten into college and shown they can play, but they're not coming from Power 5 programs. What do you make of that?
Jaden Gardner didn't come from a Power 5 program, and he was a real find for Virginia. We see it time after time, Mike, where guys come, out of the portal from the so-called mid-majors and excel at the next level. Guys from the CAA, guys from the Big South. And I'm not put off at all by that mid-major pedigree. He's signed two kids who can score. Clearly, yeah. Both these guys averaged better than 17 a game last season. And that's what UVA needs. And, Rohde's got, 3 years of eligibility left? Miner will be a one-year rental. And I was struck, he was also the Defensive Player of the Year. Oh, gee, who likes defense?
Yeah, I was sort of blown away by there's an NBA expert who tweeted, and actually Eric Bacher, the SID at Virginia, I don't know if you saw him, called him out on Twitter, Patrick Roos, and I'll read you what he tweeted, and then we can respond. Andrew Rohde to Virginia. Tony Bennett will take that dynamic style of his and wean it out of him. What a terrible fit.
Oh.
I could not disagree more with an NBA take. I mean, I watched some video of Rohde, and I saw two things. I saw a unselfish passer, a guy who just wants to make the right basketball play. That fits great with Tony Bennett. And I saw a guy who is outstanding and committed on the defensive end. That fits great with Tony Bennett. So with all due respect to Patrick Roos, I disagree completely. To me, Rohde is the perfect fit here for Tony Bennett.
Why don't we let Andrew Rohde decide? I mean, if he believed that Tony Bennett was going to wean that flair from his game, then would he have signed with or committed to Virginia? I don't believe so. So I will lean toward the young man and his family knowing what's best for him rather than someone else.
Yeah, and this is an aside, but for whatever reason, and part of it is certainly the style of play, no great coach in college basketball today is the subject of more bad takes, in my opinion, than Tony Bennett, right? Anytime they lose, it's an indictment on him and the style of play. Anytime they don't win a national title, it's because his system can't win in March. Anytime they're winning and rolling, somebody's out there tweeting about, oh, it's boring to watch. He may go down as the all-time greatest coach / victim of bad takes that college basketball has ever seen. But that one in particular, I thought stood out to me. I think you're right. Rohde knows what he's doing. Tony Bennett knows what he's doing. There are still pieces that are going to be needed. Dante Harris, who transferred in mid-year and sat out, the point guard from Georgetown, you figure he will largely play a large role. But they still need more, particularly in the front court, if they're going to get to where this program believes every year it should be.
Oh, no doubt. And, how big is – I mean, Miner is 6'8", 240. At least that's what he's listed as. And that's – They need somebody like that. To me, I've never seen the young man play, but I look at his numbers. I look at his size. I, 2.3 blocks a game. I mean, that's really good. And there's a reason he was Defensive Player of the Year in that conference, in the Northeast Conference. And I just think, wow, that's Jaden Gardner, but better defensively.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the pieces they've added are intriguing. They're going to need some more. But, in Tony Bennett, they trust in Charlottesville, and I'd say his track record backs that up. Now, in Richmond, they've got a new guy they're putting the trust in, Ryan Odom. A name who's certainly familiar to Virginia basketball fans. He was the coach at UMBC when they stunned the one seed Cavaliers in 2018 in the NCAA tournament first round. Ryan Odom since then has been at Utah State, where he was very successful, and now he's the hire at VCU. David, you spent some time with him this week. I spent some time with him at his introductory press conference. The thing that jumped out to me here is that VCU for a long time has been havoc, right? It's been the offshoots of Shaka Smart, or if you want to go back, the offshoots to Billy Donovan assistants, but that style of play. And that's not exactly Ryan's style of play. What do you make of the fit, Ryan Odom at VCU?
Oh, I think it's a great fit. Number one, because you need synergy among your leadership. And Ed McLaughlin, the AD at VCU, and Ryan go back to their time together at American University, where Ryan was working for Jeff Jones and Ed was an associate AD who was in charge of the, who was his basketball supervisor. So that's number one. Number two, I spent more than 2 hours yesterday with Coach Odom, and to say that he is honoring the VCU heritage would be a disservice. I mean, he is really, really appreciative of all those who have come before him and what they have accomplished. And you see that in his staff. He's hired Darius Theus, the former Ram, as an assistant coach. There'll be some other things that folks will see as the days and weeks pass on, more connections with that past and the Final Four. And as he said, I view this as a responsibility because I understand that I'm the first guy since Shaka who's not connected to him. Will Wade was a Shaka guy. Mike Rhodes was a Shaka guy. Now here comes Ryan Odom, who's not. But he has wasted little time in recruiting. He's already, he's lost some guys, of course, to the portal, most notably Ace Baldwin, who's going to accompany Mike Rhodes to Penn State, but he's at Joe Bamisil, Virginia Tech, George Washington, Oklahoma transfer, Jason Nelson from Richmond, Roosevelt Wheeler from Louisville, all of them RVA kids. And Efton Reed, who's now at Gonzaga, may join them. He is in the portal. So that there's going to be an awful lot of local ties on that roster and on that staff.
Local media is the big winner here because Ryan Odom is outstanding. I remember I went the year after they beat UVA. I went and spent a day with him and his program at UMBC, kind of seeing where things were a year later. He's gracious with his time. And David, the storylines in his first year, when you think about, and this is brilliant by Ed McLaughlin to have it in the schedule, in the contract, but Mike Rhodes and Penn State, right? At some point, they're going to have to play VCU. And get that game going. That's going to be a tremendous storyline. You mentioned getting a transfer from rival Richmond. It's going to be a great storyline. The local guy, there's going to be a lot of excitement and fun. And I think the Ryan Odom hire shows me one main thing. It shows me, because I think it's a great hire, and I think Ryan has a chance to be really successful. To me, he is the most accomplished, significant hire at VCU in this run of their success. And it tells you that they're on a different ball field now, right? It isn't, hey, you've got to go out and make this hire that maybe is a diamond in the rough or maybe is an up-and-comer. You can go out and get a coach that a lot of programs would want. And a lot of people thought, could be an ACC coach at this point. I think it shows kind of where VCU is as a program, that they can go out and hire a coach of Ryan Odom's pedigree.
Mike, if you walk in their practice complex, you would understand why that job is so attractive. Number one, it is a basketball school. End of story. There is no football there. It is basketball is the number one priority there. And it shows in that facility across the street from the Siegel Center. That is an NBA caliber practice complex. And it has been well kept. I believe it's almost 8 years old now, but they have maintained it. They've upgraded it. Ryan, we walked around. He was showing me, you know, virtually everything in the building. He said, I've been a lot of places, never had anything like this.
Yeah, the commitment to basketball at VCU is real. And at that introductory press conference, I asked Ryan about, you know, would he be open to playing Virginia and to kind of rekindling that. And he said, you know, it's good to play all of the teams in state and to have those in-state rivalries. And there's a lot of them here in Virginia, but that'd be a lot of fun, a lot of fun for us to watch. We hope today was fun for you to listen to. You can subscribe to Teal and Barber on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite pods. And please consider supporting local journalism with an online subscription to the TD. You can find special promotional offers available at richmond.com. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer and yours truly. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times-Dispatch and richmond.com. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe, and please join David and me again next time.